Monday, April 26th, 2410. Klingon Defense Force Headquarters. Klingjai Prime. Klingon Union. Even though B'Elanna knew she was not here to be disciplined, quite the opposite, in fact, walking into what amounted to a review board was somewhat intimidating. As fleet commander, it was General Zarg Thalek's right to oversee the proceedings, so it was no surprise to see him at the head of the table as she entered the conference room she'd been instructed to report to this morning. Unsurprisingly, Sub-Commander Kratak, Zarg's adjutant, sat to his left, and on his right was a thoughtful-looking Klingon male wearing a much more elaborate version of a battle engineer's dress. B'Elanna had never met him, but assumed this must be Fleet Engineer Katarn, who was responsible for every battle engineer in the KDF. She came to attention and saluted Zarg as the most senior. Lieutenant B'Elanna Sutai O'Brien, reporting as ordered. Zarg returned the salute gravely, then motioned for her to sit before speaking. Lieutenant, we are here to review your claim to command of the Hwatcha by right of challenge, and the events which led to your capture of the prize ship D7M3C509. Once he finished the required formalities, the general's grave aspect gave way to a surprisingly eager grin. From what we can discern from the Hwatcha's internal sensor logs, I suspect this will be one of the more interesting afternoons I have been compelled to spend ashore of late. For the better part of an hour, B'Elanna explained how she'd gone from half-napping in the J-tube to challenging Jurdak on the Hwatcha's bridge. In most cases, her audience allowed her to speak without interruption, but Katarn and Kratak occasionally asked for a point or two of clarification or explanation, while Zarg remained silent.
You rode the TDU?
Katarn's voice was a mix of surprise and admiration, his eyes shining with glee.
Ha! I've wanted to try that since I was a Beck.
It was quite a ride. A few minutes later, she had finished giving the board an account of Captain Jurdak's final moments. After a moment where all three seemed to pause to appreciate the traitor receiving his due, Katarn glanced over to Zarg, nodding slightly, and the general spoke for the first time since she began her report.
Your challenge was well made, Commander.
B'Elanna's eyebrows rose in surprise at the declaration of her new rank, but before she could speak, Zarg continued,
Now, if you don't mind, tell us how you went from that challenge to arriving in Klingjai space with a captured battlecruiser.
After a deep breath to collect her thoughts, B'Elanna began to explain. I have a message from another time. ARI Productions Unlimited presents Undocumented Features Future Imperfect, The Order of the Rose, A Duelist Opera. Technical Difficulties, Retaliation, by Matt Wagner, with Benjamin D. Hutchins. Hi, that's me. Thursday, April 15th, 2410. KDS Hwatcha. Disputed Space, Coreward of Klingjai Prime. Klingon Union. The Hwatcha didn't have a dedicated medical officer. Such was rare even on larger KDF ships. But the science Gorn was, as he put it, a sufficient substitute. At his insistence, B'Elanna sat in the hastily cleaned command chair on the bridge and allowed him to take a brief tricorder scan, and after a moment of thought, he produced a hypospray from his utility kit, loading as he spoke.
Your injuries are relatively minor, but your vitals show signs of major fatigue. Your hybrid physiology is, unsurprisingly, somewhat different from that of a full Klingon, but a mild melorazine solution will still help.
Before B'Elanna could say anything more, he pressed it to the side of her neck with a quick, sure movement, and she felt a brief coolness as the medication was discharged.
The one would suggest you take a brief rest cycle. Vokan and I can determine the loyalty of the remaining crew, and now that the ship is under cloak, we are unlikely to be detected.
She could feel the ache in her muscles ease a bit, but after the day she'd had, a little quality time in a bunk that was unlikely to be disturbed sounded pretty good, particularly as it would be the first such she'd had in around a month. "Fine," she said. "I'll be in my new quarters." Bellana stood, taking in all both of her new bridge officers. "Vokan, secure that boarding craft. Sciencegorn, after you've finished getting what's left of the crew organized, I want you to start breaking down sensor logs to find where they came from. Keep us under cloak and get us off this sector's main spacelands. Action." Both saluted her, Vokan with more respect than she could ever remember him saluting Jertak with. "Acting." She felt a bit odd walking up to Deck 4 and entering what had, until very recently, been Jertak's quarters. But it was certainly closer to the bridge than her old quarters, and it wouldn't hurt to turn over the late traitor's files and see if there was anything of use. In the end, the lure of the computer console sitting atop the desk was more attractive than the bunk, though that also looked a lot more comfortable than the standard hard, flat niche set into a wall. With her newly acquired command access and a pass of her icebreaker to crack the few personally encrypted files, it wasn't long before she found a set of messages sent between Jerdak's private channel and an anonymous message box. The last one was particularly interesting. "Jerdak, we are prepared. Approach from 247 Mark 25 Absolute, but continue to avoid the eastern border of your patrol sector. Maintain warp speed until notified, and our small craft will make rendezvous as arranged. Once the Lontai Clavar is secured, you will be beamed aboard from the bridge. Message ends." Bellana sat back in her... chair, and drummed her fingers on the desk for a moment before punching the comm panel. "Sciencegorn, report."
"All remaining crew present and accounted for, Captain,"
the Sciencegorn's voice replied.
"Two of the Beck showed less than total enthusiasm for the change in command. Vokan has placed them in the brig until their morale improves."
"Hmm. Any luck on the sensor logs?"
"Moderate. The modifications to the Borders shuttle served to disrupt some of their more obvious sensor traces when in flight, but I am working to reconstruct their approach vector."
"And the traces indicate that they came out of our own patrol sector to intercept us within Clavarite space."
"Clairvoyance is not one of the listed side effects of Melorazine. A most interesting drug interaction,"
the Sciencegorn mused dryly. Bellana chuckled. If she'd been able to meet the Sciencegorn before this, serving on the Huachap might have almost been tolerable. "I've been taking a look at some of Jerdak's files. It seems he was deliberately avoiding the sector's spinward border."
"Interesting. I will retask the high-resolution sensors accordingly."
"Very well. In the meantime, cloak and get us underway. I want to start running down the most likely points of origin. Action."
"Acting, my lord."
That was going to take some getting used to. After a brief nap, Bellana returned to the bridge to find the Sciencegorn at his station, while Vokan sat at the helm. "Vokan, report." The weapons officer stood to face her, saluting before he began to speak, then declared gravely, "The Targ have eaten well this day, my lord." Bellana regarded him expressionlessly for 3.24 seconds, then said, "About the shuttle." "Ah, yes. The shuttle has been secured. I have detailed one of the trustworthy Beck to stand watch at the hatchway. There were no obvious clues to their point of origin, but I did determine what their next step was going to be." Vailana raised an eyebrow as she took the center seat. Okay, I'm listening. Litoron has a tri-cobalt charge aboard, with enough yield to destroy a decent-sized planetoid, let alone the Hua-Cha. He gave a dark little smile. The One used his own initiative and removed the detonator and priming modules before reporting to the bridge. It isn't safe, precisely. Tri-cobalt explosives never are. But we are in no danger of being triggered. Vailana let loose a low whistle. Talk about using a sledgehammer to swat a fly.
Indeed, said the Science Gorn. A curious choice. A properly placed photon torpedo would have been enough to do the job with the ship's shields and engines disabled.
Let's be thankful they didn't get that far. Vailana turned back to Vokan, still turning that information over in her head. Anything else? No, my lord. The Science Gorn tapped his claws on his terminal, then provided his own update.
Based on the information you provided, there are four systems at the spinward border of Grid 449, which would be possible candidates for a forward base or rally point, due to the lack of regular KDF or civilian traffic. We are currently en route to the first, Lutyen 094, under cloak. ETA 4 hours at present speed.
Vailana nodded. Okay. Once we're within range, start scanning for any unusual activity. Might as well keep an eye out for residual tri-cobalt readings, too. In the meantime, I'm going to head down to the engineering spaces and put as many systems as I can into emergency automation, given that we're down almost half the crew at this point, and I suspect I'm going to be a little busy.
A reasonable precaution, the Gorn allowed. I will notify you when we come into sensor range.
Vailana nodded, and had made her way almost to the bridge entrance when she stopped, as if remembering something, and turned around. Oh, Vokan?
Yes, Captain.
I found a box of printed materials in the captain's quarters. I've placed them in the corridor outside. I don't care what happens to them, and I don't need to know, so long as I never see them again.
Vokan made an uncomfortable grimace. It wasn't hard to imagine what she'd probably found, and part of him wanted to laugh, but the rest of him remembered what she'd done to Jerdak, and realized that his new captain probably wasn't in a joking mood.
I believe I understand, Captain. I will remove them immediately.
Very well. Carry on, gentlemen.
With that, she turned and left the bridge, raising up her Omni-tool as she walked, to start figuring out how much of the Hua-Cha's systems could be managed remotely. 4 hours wasn't a lot of time, and she had a lot of work to do. Friday, April 16th, 2410. By the time the Science Gorn had called her back to the bridge, Vailana was reasonably satisfied with how much she'd been able to set up in engineering. Since the Koloth class had followed the same design rules as the Burrell, that meant it was, at heart, a ship designed to be operated by a minimal crew, even a single person in a real emergency. Between the systems that had already had options for automation, some furious coding work on her Omni-tool, and a lot of cursing at the Klingon designers who had bastardized the Predator-class blueprints in the first place, she had been able to route the control of almost everything she'd formerly maintained from engineering, either to the bridge or her Omni-tool. As she settled into the center chair on the bridge, the Science Gorn nodded to her, then began pulling up information on the main viewer.
Captain, after making long-range scans, I believe I have something.
The display came up as a chart of the Lutyen 094 system.
The system itself is unpopulated, an unremarkable F25 yellow-white star, a few Class H and J planets, and one Class L planetoid. But when I scan for starship traces...
The Gorn tapped a few keys, and suddenly green trails crisscrossed the map.
There is far more traffic than you would expect, even taking the possibility of smugglers or reconnaissance flights into account.
B'Elanna nodded to show she was following him. Did you happen to spot any activity as you swept the system? The Gorn shook his head.
No, but if ships operating out of the system are under cloak, that's not unusual.
His mouth turned to a fangy grin.
What is unusual, however, is what I found when I searched for signs of tricobalt processing.
The map changed again, and now a bright red dot appeared, with almost all of the sensor traces crisscrossing through it.
It would seem someone has been rather busy. This level of processing byproducts indicates they have created enough tricobalt compounds for hundreds of warheads.
B'Elanna considered the map. So they're processing on the planetoid?
Yes, the Science Gorn replied. If the one had to guess, it is likely they set up a series of prefabricated habitats and mined their way beneath the surface once they needed to expand.
Well, that explains what's going on, but that still seems like a lot of traffic, given how little livable space they're likely to have. Even if they're shipping warheads back to Chronos, it looks like they're getting a visit from someone almost every day. The Science Gorn made a low rattling sound, which B'Elanna figured was his version of a thoughtful hum.
Processing ore into tricobalt compounds is quite dangerous without proper protective gear. Exposure to tricobalt resin, in particular, is toxic for most carbon-based life forms, including Klingons. Given the sheer volume of output, it is entirely possible that they are using forced labor.
The Gorn looked over, a faintly disgusted tone in his voice.
Prisoners, most likely, or slaves. If they are taking no particular care or safeguards, it is plausible that they would require regular replacements.
They spent the better part of a day preparing to infiltrate the base. Some of that time was spent gathering as much sensor data as possible, to give their little commando crew as much of a floor plan of the facility as they could, and some of it was spent on more practical matters. One in particular was the problem of B'Elanna being rather identifiable. Even if her uncle's forces weren't expecting her to appear on their base, it was likely that she would be recognized. The last time she tried to radically change her appearance, it had been a literal transformation at the hands of her former roommate, thanks to the dusty pages of one of Mia's old sorcery textbooks. Sadly, the KDF didn't have an on-call magician, so she was left to go the old-fashioned route. Part of the solution was the simple, if morbid, trick of raiding Caridus's former closet and using the ship's limited laundry facilities to help alter one of her uniforms down to B'Elanna's size. Pigment microcapsules provided by the Science Gorn changed her skin tone to a duskier shade, and a little bit of tinkering provided a false eye patch that actually served as a tiny data terminal for her Omnitool, allowing her to gather and review data even with the holographic controls in passive mode. The final step was the most dramatic, but actually took the least amount of time. Since long before she began to attend DSM, B'Elanna had preferred to keep her hair in a fairly simple cut, parted around the middle or just to the side. The length had varied, but she'd never really gone far from what she found easy and comfortable to maintain. Now, however, she, or more properly the Science Gorn, had shaved nearly all of it to the scalp, save for a small section at the back, which had then been stimulated to grow until she could braid it into a warrior's queue. Taking a look at herself in the mirror, it was a striking change. In some ways, she found she actually liked it quite a bit. Anyone who looks at me for a while could potentially figure it out, but I probably won't be shot on sight. The Science Gorn nodded.
Indeed. Though it would be best if you avoid any lengthy encounters, as that will likely mean you have been captured and placed into a holding cell.
Well, that's a cheerful thought. Come on. It's time to go beam into a covert installation filled with unstable toxic explosives.
I see you chose to keep the hairstyle, Kratak commented dryly, though I can understand why you dispensed with the eye patch.
B'Elanna smiled. It was fairly useful. Once we infiltrated the planetoid, I was able to get a decent map of the facility through passive scans, and being able to keep an eye on that, so to speak, was a big advantage.
So, Katarn asked, what was your next move?
Getting in was pretty easy. We slipped down in their own shuttle, then entered the base through one of the tapped-out quarries at the surface. We left the Beck to guard what we had planned to be our escape vessel, and the Science Gorn was sent to find access into the Clavarite data systems.
B'Elanna smirked slightly.
Meanwhile, Vokan and I slipped into one of the prisoner deliveries.
Saturday, April 17th, 2410. Planetoid Lutian 0943F. Klingon Union.
The holding cells were exactly what you'd expect for a place like this. Caverns hewn out of the planetoid's bare rock with a few choke points where guards controlled force fields that would let prisoners in or out. Barrels filled with flammable materials for warmth, rudimentary sanitary facilities, an area where ration packs were dumped in, likely intended to cause the maximum possible chaos and sow resentment among the prisoners as the stronger ones fought to hoard food and the weaker ones were pushed away to starve. Which made it all the more surprising when B'Elanna heard someone shouting over the general din in oddly accented Klingonas as the current shift of miners and workers returned.
Form lines! Form lines for food!
The mass of bodies slowly evolved into a fairly orderly queue, one line that mostly seemed to be Gorn, another of Klingons who appeared to have been mining, a third of those who seemed to be smaller or sicker, judging by the way they stood or sat, and the last of the other races who had been forced into labor. B'Elanna spotted a couple of Romulans, a few humans, and, to her surprise, a bedraggled-looking Seleucian, still wearing what was left of his navy trousers, blouse, and a seriously distressed jacket. She motioned Vokan to line up with the miners, then walked over to that last specimen.
I am Caridus of the Huachat. Can you tell me what is going on?
The Seleucian seemed a bit surprised to be addressed by her, but gave her a respectful nod.
Marcus Satori, HMS Implacable. It's Chowkol. The lunatic is running things.
B'Elanna gave him a skeptical look with her visible eye.
The lunatic?
Satori offered a hint of a smirk.
Well, I certainly think he's crazy. He claims to be a Klingon, but I never saw one who looked like that. But since I've been here, he's been trying to make sure things stay orderly and that everyone gets fed. Gives a fair shake to the sick or injured. Not exactly what I expected to find in a Klingon gulag.
No. Her face tugged down into a slight frown, a mix of personal surprise and attempting to keep in character.
And the other prisoners allow him to do this?
Satori shrugged.
Well.
He paused as a sound of challenge came from near the front of the queues.
See for yourself.
She left the Seleucian and worked her way to the front, pushing a few out of the way to get a better look. There was a bearded man in front of the ration pack chute, in what looked like the remnants of a ringmail tunic over a snug-fitting turtleneck and some utilitarian trousers. After a moment, she realized it was, or had once been, a 22nd-century Klingon Imperial Navy uniform, just like the ones Koth's crew wore on the old holodrama Battlecruiser Vengeance. The man in the archaic outfit seemed too small to be a Klingon, and certainly didn't have any of the distinctive features, but he radiated confidence and authority as he faced off with a burly specimen in some kind of leather and fur outfit. After a moment, B'Elanna realized he was a Nausicaan, who must have been sent to work the mines.
"I don't listen to you, little scrap. I take what I want."
Still speaking in the older Klingon tongue, the man looked entirely unimpressed as he stared up at this taller, more obviously muscular alien.
"Get in your line and I will not hurt you."
"Bah!"
The Nausicaan lunged, drawing what looked like an improvised shank. His opponent didn't seem terribly fazed by this, however. Instead of dropping back or trying to evade, he stepped into the charge, shifting his weight slightly so the blade would pass him, then dealt a bladed hand strike to the Nausicaan's throat. With a sound like a drain being stopped, the big guy dropped to his knees, weapon falling to the ground as his hands came reflexively to protect his neck, struggling to breathe through his collapsed windpipe. The man in the old uniform leaned down, still perfectly composed, and plucked the shank up off of the floor. Casually, he examined it, then crouched in front of the Nausicaan, locking eyes.
"Because this was the first time you tried to challenge me, I will allow you to live. Your throat will heal. I would suggest that you do not try to speak until it does."
The man raised the blade, lightly tapping it against the Nausicaan's forehead.
"I'm keeping this knife. Attempt to take more than your share of food again, or bring another weapon in here, and I will plant this blade in your skull. Do you understand?"
He waited for the Nausicaan to nod, carefully, then stood.
"Very well. Go to the back of your line, and I will allow you to take a half share of food."
B'Elanna gave a low whistle to herself. "Okay," she thought. "That explains how he's making this work." She loitered at the back until everyone else had been given a ration pack, then approached the apparent leader of the camp. As she got closer, she took note of the slightly canted eyebrows, tone of his skin, and the torn remnant of what looked like an old Klingon sigil on his sleeve. The question of crazy was yet to be determined, but the details added up with his archaic uniform to suggest an augment gene mod, one of the victims of a crazed force eugenics scheme inflicted on the Empire back in the 2100s. B'Elanna had never seen one in person. They were all but extinct nowadays. But the actor who played Sub-Commander Dorn, the human character on Battlecruiser Vengeance, had a cosmetic version of the mod. The Seleucian obviously wasn't a fan. Dragging up some of the older forms of Klingonaz address from Professor Krog's lessons, she raised her hand as he made eye contact.
"Hail, warrior. I am Caridus. Are you in command of this place?"
The augment's lips quirked, and he gave B'Elanna another surprise as he addressed her in standard.
"Your accent is terrible, Caridus, but I appreciate your attempt at a civil tongue. I am Karn Vestai Carath. I do not command anyone, but I could not stand this place becoming a rabble."
He swept a quick glance over her, and B'Elanna got the strong impression that he'd just figured out exactly how to take her apart if needed.
"You are new here. You've obviously been in a fight, but your clothes show no sign of being down in the mines."
Karn shook his head. "When I arrived, they simply dumped the ration packs through the chute and encouraged the others to fight over them. Wasteful. Disgusting. These scum who call themselves the Empire in this time have no clin in them. I applied discipline."
B'Elanna nodded.
"So I saw. You're right, I arrived today. A few of my crew were with me. What can you tell me about this place?" Karn motioned to a shelf that had been cut into the rock, pocketing his newly acquired weapon as he sat down as well. Once she had settled across from him, he gestured out to the exits.
"They will come in 6 hours for the next shift. Anyone considered healthy enough will be sent to the mine. You will be given some insulated clothing, drills, tools. Everything is tagged with screamer circuits. It cannot be taken back with you. He turned slightly, looking over at where several prisoners of various races were huddled around one of the fires, all of them unnaturally pale. Those who become too weak to mine, or who they feel will be too likely to cause problems with a work crew, are promoted. You are likely to be taken with them because of your size. You will be given gloves and goggles, but no filters, and made to process the ore. His eyes locked on hers again. You will become sick. Some take a few days to begin feeling the effects of the poisons from the processing floor. Some succumb within hours. His voice was clipped but not cold, simply offering an honest assessment. It is a death sentence. I am sorry. You've obviously lasted long enough to make an impression here. I am Klingon. I was born to survive. It is my duty. B'Elanna leaned in, her voice going quiet. The first duty of any prisoner is to escape. Karn gave her a bemused look. I would like nothing more. But we have few resources, and the only ships to enter or leave this place are short-range shuttles and transports, nothing with the speed or capacity to reach safety. B'Elanna smirked. Don't be so sure. Karn's eyes flashed with approval. It could be possible for a small group to overcome the guards when they arrive and gain access to the main corridors. This place is not truly set up to prevent escape. Our captors place much stock in the assumption that we have nowhere to go. Not long after, she took her leave and began to investigate the cavern, allowing her Omni-tool to take more passive sensor readings to help gauge the surrounding area. It took B'Elanna some time to find a relatively private area in the cavern, and after a few minutes, Vokan arrived, having worked his way around from the opposite direction. My lord. Better not call me that here. Keep using Caritas. Vokan nodded. Very well. For now. There are some with some fighting spirit left, as you saw, but obviously too many to take with us. Even if we stuffed the cargo bay on the Hwa Chap full, many would be left behind. B'Elanna frowned. That's a problem. I don't like the idea of leaving anyone in this place, particularly anyone suffering from cobalt poisoning who could still be saved. Vokan shrugged. She hadn't really expected him to have much interest in that, but for the moment, his personal investment in the matter was irrelevant so long as he kept following instructions. We may have to settle for gathering as much information as we can and then withdrawing to organize a strike with the rest of the fleet. Before she could try fleshing out that idea, her Omni-tool buzzed beneath her wrist for attention, and the incoming call graphic displayed inside her eye patch. Taking a second look from both sides to make sure the coast was clear, she tapped the Omni-tool to life, bringing up a tiny audio-only graphic.
I have secured access to the computer core, the Science Gorn said without preamble. As a result, I believe I have determined what this facility is doing.
B'Elanna caught herself nodding, even though the Gorn couldn't see her. Excellent. Report. The Science Gorn sat at a terminal in the computer center, the body of a thoroughly neutralized Clavarite laid out on the floor. His claws tapped quick queries in as he spoke into his shielded comm unit.
As we suspected, this facility is manufacturing tri-cobalt devices from the ore being processed by the labor camp and delivering them to a series of cargo vessels, mostly registered as commercial freight haulers, not military vessels.
Commercial?
It appears the prisoners load the devices into standard cargo modules, which are then loaded aboard. Once the freighter is fully stocked, it is placed on autopilot and enters a wide orbit of the system's perimeter. That likely explains much of the residual traces we detected during our approach.
Belana's voice was thoughtful as she considered that. So they're planning to smuggle them in some kind of suicide insurgent strike? That doesn't sound very much like my uncle. Then she paused. That doesn't explain why they're keeping them in system, though. Can you see if they have any information on where those freighters are supposed to go?
A few moments later, the Gorn's breath hissed out in dismay.
Klinzai Prime.
Anywhere else?
No. Every single freighter has prepared falsified flight plans for Klinzai Prime. Some approaching from most direct vector, others taking a circuitous route, but all converging upon Klinzai Prime. I'm showing documentation for 15 vessels. If those were all loaded to capacity...
Belana finished his thought. The planet would be rendered uninhabitable for decades. Maybe centuries.
I believe this has escalated beyond simply acquiring intelligence.
Damned right it has. Time for a prison break. The science Gorn gave a brief rattle of approval.
I believe I may have something to assist in that as well.
Belana had a keen edge of interest in her voice. Go on.
Level 3, Section D, has been sealed under highest security clearance. I do not believe I can co-opt the cameras or facility sensors nearby without risking detection, but I show signs of auxiliary oxygen feeds being routed in, heavy levels of water recycling, raw protein solutions.
Vokan spoke up, dawning awareness in his voice. They are supplying a ship there. Obviously something more dangerous than a cargo vessel. The Gorn's satisfaction was unmistakable.
And a great deal larger, based on these readings. The one suspects we would find it useful.
Not long after that, Belana emerged from the back of the caverns. While the science Gorn prepared to aid their efforts from the outside, Vokan moved off to start sounding out his likely candidates for mounting an escape attempt, while Belana sought out Karn again. He wasn't terribly hard to find. Aside from his look and dress, the other prisoners provided the augment with a rather wide berth. He didn't quite look at her as she approached, but she could see his eyes shift, making a quick judgment of her intent.
Karadas.
Vestai Karath, walk with me. Deliberately turning away, allowing him clear access to her back, she walked back toward the spot she and Vokan had found. If Karn was the kind of Klingon she thought he was, he would be curious, and deliberately putting herself in a vulnerable position ought to be taken as confidence, not foolishness, she hoped. Once she had reached the relatively secluded space, she settled back, waiting, and was rewarded by Karn's arrival a few moments later. Are you followed? The other prisoners know better than to attempt that. Nodding, Belana took a moment to think about how to begin, then decided to ask the easy question first. How did you end up here, Karn? Karn looked bemused but game. I am, or was, the tactical officer aboard F-42, the Rage of Kalis. We were making a survey of a previously uncharted system within the Dekel cluster. I was leading a survey team on one of the planets that showed signs of being habitable. He gave a sigh that seemed almost wistful. It was actually quite pleasant. Most of the worlds we evaluated for future expansion were barren, at best, but this one had a temperate zone, potable groundwater, ample plant and animal life,
There were signs of a previous civilization, but orbital surveys only showed evidence of ruins. Or so we thought. I was sweeping one such building when I encountered an artifact, and was lost. Belana's eyebrows rose. Perhaps he was crazy, but it seemed bizarrely plausible. Certainly back in the days Karn appeared to be from. Weird artifacts causing trouble was an occupational hazard. The Dekel Cluster is in territory held by the Usurper now. Karn's laugh wasn't terribly pleasant. Yes. It was obvious that a great deal of time had passed when I left the chamber. I was suddenly in an established fortification, and the occupants were not pleased to discover me. His arms crossed. I gave a good accounting of myself, but there were too many to battle alone. Eventually I was captured, interrogated, and deposited here after I refused to swear loyalty to the so-called Emperor Kalis the XII. Belana smirked slightly at that. So, you obviously aren't much of a friend to House Clavar. That means that even if you aren't really part of the Klingon Union, we have a common enemy. Not just militarily, but in fighting for the true Klin. Karn looked guardedly interested. Belana figured it was the best she could hope for and pushed on. You were right. My crew and I were in a fight, but we didn't get captured. We defeated the enemy and followed them back to this pit, intending to gather intelligence before we returned to the fleet. But we found more here than we expected. This is no longer a reconnaissance operation. Karn didn't respond verbally, but his eyes had narrowed and his stance had straightened slightly. His attention was focused entirely on her words as she continued. The ore that's been mined and processed here is being turned into tri-cobalt charges. Big ones. Loaded on cargo pods daily, as you've seen. But what you couldn't see is that the freighters those pods are being loaded on are being prepared to black glass Klingi Prime. Karn frowned. I don't know what you mean by that term. Just as he asked for that clarification, Vokan arrived, and it was he who answered. Tarmech Gor. Burning a planet's surface and sowing it with poisons to render it permanently uninhabitable. The ultimate act of cowardice. Karn whirled, the knife he'd taken earlier appearing in his hand, but Belana spoke before he could strike. Easy now. Karn Vestai Kareth? This is one of mine, Lieutenant Vokan. The knife disappeared again, though Karn gave his rough counterpart a suspicious look. You should not have done that. Vokan gave Karn an appraisal of his own, and whatever he found made him take a half step back, offering a respectful nod. The one apologizes, Vestai Kareth. If we could get back to the matter at hand, gentlemen. Both turned, focusing on her. We can't allow the Klavarites to destroy Klingi Prime. It wouldn't just mean the death of the Union, it would mean the death of the Klingon people. Klavor's ways would crush their very souls, and what would be left might still call itself a Klingon Empire, but there would be nothing worthy of that name. Belana focused on Karn with her one visible eye, offering him a hand. My crew and I are going to do everything we can to stop this. We need to destroy those freighters, reduce this base, and get as many of these prisoners to freedom as can be saved. It's a tall order, no matter what, but it gets a little easier when we have some help we can count on. The augment considered her words, and it was clear he was laying it all out in his head. It didn't take a genetically enhanced brain to figure out how tough their odds were, but it didn't seem to bother him. Instead, Karn smiled that little sardonic smirk once more, stepped forward, and took her forearm in a warrior's clasp. Perhaps there are still some in this time with the Klin in them after all. I do have one question, though. Oh? You hesitate every time you approach an object that requires depth perception. That means you have not adjusted to having one functioning eye, and there are no indications of a fresh wound. That likely means it is part of a disguise. So, Caridus, what is your real name? B'Elanna smiled. I guess I couldn't expect to get that past someone a bit smarter than the average guard. My name is B'Elanna Sutai O'Brien, captain of the Klingon Union Bird of Prey Hwatcha. Pleased to meet you.
4 hours later, Base Command Center. Kral, son of Korg, was not terribly pleased with his situation. Oh, it was an important task, and certainly better than being interrogated or imprisoned in a labor camp, as he had spent the years between the Amar's capture and the Emperor coming to power. But running this base was no worthy duty for a warrior. From the command center, he spent most days reviewing progress reports from the Tri-Cobalt refinery, watching the slow ballet of shuttles and freighters exchanging prisoners and weapons, and drinking blood wine. Once the work of preparing the decisive strike was done, however, he would be given his proper reward. The Emperor had promised to give him a place at his right hand during the attack, crushing the so-called Klingon Union beneath his boot and securing control over the Empire. All he had to do was endure a few more weeks of boredom. As the Beck prepared to send out the morning work assignments, he sat at his desk, set on a raised platform above the rest of the consoles and monitor stations, sipping his morning Roctagino as it steamed from his tankard. Flipping through overnight reports on the freighter loading operations, he barely noticed the sounds of his subordinates speaking to each other until their voices changed in pitch. At first excited, then concerned, then confusion. He set his drink down and was about to ask what was going on when one of them was good enough to do it for him.
My lord?
Report.
Something odd is going on. At first it appeared to be a simple dispute over food at day meal, but it seems to be escalating. We have signs of several organized groups attacking each other.
Kral considered this. They encouraged dissent among the workers. Among other things, by keeping their anger directed at each other, it prevented them from focusing on their captors. But there were limits. Since the next shipment of prisoners wasn't due to arrive for another 36 hours, losing too many of the current batch could mean falling behind, and he wanted to be off of this forsaken rock as soon as possible.
Dispatch a squad from the garrison. Break it up and bring me the ringleaders. We will use them to set an example. Action.
Acting.
Holding cells. It really hadn't been difficult to arrange a riot. After Vokan had set up a few pockets of Klingons to begin fighting as the food arrived, some of the Nausicaans had decided to chip in once it was clear Karn was not taking any action to stop it. After they joined in, several of the Gordon prisoners decided to even the odds, and before long almost everyone was picking up a dance partner. Or so it appeared. Anyone who was watching closely would see quite a few pulled blows, near misses, or deceptively ineffective grapples, particularly among the prisoners nearest to the entry points. There were exceptions, of course. Prisoners who hadn't been informed of the plan or simply didn't stick to the script. One of the latter caught B'Elanna's attention as she saw the big Nausicaan from before running toward Karn with a nasty-looking chunk of loose rock in his hands, clearly intending to get some payback. Karn was turning, and B'Elanna saw a glint of steel as he pulled his knife. But before either could do anything else, the Nausicaan was yanked backward by Marcus Satori, who had wrapped his hand around the pirate's injured throat and squeezed hard. The Nausicaan's hands opened by reflex, dropping the rock as he half-turned, half-fell. Satori released his grip, let his opponent hit the floor, then turned out the lights with a well-aimed kick to the temple,
Locking eyes with Karn, the Seleucian gave him the briefest of smiles, then ran forward to join the foe melee. Moments later, there was an audible electric pop as the holding area force fields were cut by the technicians in the base control room, and the sounds of bellowed challenges as the guards began to pour in, armed with pain sticks, shock batons, and batleth. Before they could begin to establish some kind of order, however, the garrison troops were caught completely flat-footed by the entire front mass of the rioters, turning toward them and charging forward as soon as the force fields had dropped. Facing what they now realized was a well-organized counterattack, the Clavarites attempted to close ranks and push the prisoners back so that they could be contained again, but they were badly outmassed. The security detail might have been enough to manage disorganized, disoriented captives, particularly with so many of them suffering from poor food and cobalt poisoning, but they were never equipped to defeat a mass uprising. Those who could separate themselves from the oncoming wave fell back, attempting to reach their fallback position near the main corridor, where they could use the disruptor turrets mounted there to help quell the assault. Unfortunately, when the guards arrived, they found the turrets active, and aiming at them. The Science Gorn stood, disruptor in one hand, tricorder in the other, waiting behind the small armored wall that the guards had intended to use for cover. Giving them an entirely mirthless smile, he tapped a control on the tricorder with one foreclaw, and the garrison was suddenly sandwiched between fire from their own emplacements on one side and the rapidly advancing escapees on the other. It was over in moments. As the escapees reached the turrets, the Gorn deactivated them, then began to look through the front ranks. A moment later, B'Elanna managed to push her way through, and the Saurian gave her a respectful salute.
Captain.
Science Gorn, nice work. Karn looked quizzically at B'Elanna.
Science Gorn?
Later, B'Elanna answered, sotto voce. The Gorn looked over at Karn, raising an eye ridge.
It is a sufficient descriptor.
Turning back to B'Elanna, he gestured to the corridor.
The one is always pleased to be of service. The secure docking bay is this way.
As they began briskly storming through the corridor, Karn came up to move roughly alongside B'Elanna, staying where she could see him with her unobscured eye.
I thought you said you had a ship.
B'Elanna nodded. I do. But my uncle was kind enough to leave something better here, so we're going to go relieve him of it.
Will you not have anyone crew your own vessel?
She smirked slightly. Leave that to me. My lord, the garrison squad was overrun. The console tech was frantic as he attempted to gain control of the situation.
We have signs of a data intrusion. Riot gas and intruder suppression systems are offline.
Krall growled as he stalked to the console, his face set into a glower.
How is this happening?
I don't know. All of our access permissions seem to be revoked. Whomever has control routed all access through the main computer core maintenance consoles. The tech turned, his face drained with shock.
He must have penetrated the station and physically accessed the system.
Krall's eyes narrowed.
If he had access to the computer core...
He turned, heading for the door.
Have the remaining garrison forces meet me on level 3.
When B'Elanna and her impromptu assault force reached level 3, the additional security was obvious. Where most of the areas they'd moved through had either been created from prefab components or simple adaptation of the planetoid's bare rock, they now faced a heavily reinforced blast door. Opening up her Omni-tool, B'Elanna began working on breaking the security, while Vokan, Karn, and some of their new recruits set up a defense around the access lifts. They broke through the door, then another,
without encountering any sign of the Clavarite defenders.
"I don't like this," Karn observed as they moved up to the door for Section D. "The only reason to leave this area undefended is if they are preparing an ambush."
Belana nodded. "I'm almost certain that's the case." She tapped several commands into her Omni-tool, loading up another program and leaving it active on her eyepiece display, before swapping back to the icebreaker.
"You seem oddly unconcerned about walking into a trap."
"Not unconcerned, just prepared." The icebreaker sounded a cheerful tune, followed by the door grinding open, revealing a much larger chamber. This room had most likely been an open crevasse in the planetoid's surface before the Clavarites arrived. They'd added catwalks and docking apparatus, a boarding gangway, some of the ubiquitous hex lights used in shipyards and other construction zones, and then set up an atmospheric containment field over the mouth. If the docking slip had been unoccupied, there would have been an incredible panoramic view of the black void from here, spotted with pinpricks of distant stars, the occasional bit of nearby debris, or the passage of the planetoid's neighbors as it moved around the system's star. However, since the slip was occupied, what Belana and her new crew got instead was a panoramic view of a Kat'Inga-class battlecruiser. Belana's eyes lit up with undisguised pleasure.
"Ooh, hello there."
Her front element, consisting of her crew from the Hwacha, Karn, Satori, and a couple of the larger Gorn, were about halfway around to the gangway entrance when a clearly amplified voice bounced off the walls of the cavern.
"That's far enough."
Belana turned, looking up to what she now saw was a second shelf cut into the cavern, about a story up, that suddenly held what must have been every Imperial Navy trooper in the place. The officer who had spoken took a half step forward, sweeping a furious gaze over the group.
"Someone leads this rabble. Show yourself."
Without hesitation, Belana took a step toward him, her visible eye narrowing.
"I do."
Then her brows quirked upwards in faint recognition.
"I know you. You were aboard the Amar."
"Krav? Krag?
No. Krall."
Krall frowned down at her.
"The Amar? How would you know about that, unless..."
It was his turn to experience a sudden realization as he got a better look at her face.
"Impossible."
He leapt from his perch, landing with a hard thud before straightening and striding toward her. Belana could hear movement behind her. A brief look from the corner of her eye showed the Science Gorn moving a little closer, ready to support her. The escapees between them backed away as Krall approached, pistol drawn, stopping just a few feet away. His eyes bore into her, and she could see him mentally wiping away her disguise.
"You were supposed to be on your way to Chronos by now, Lontai Clavar."
Belana couldn't help but smirk a bit.
"If my uncle wanted my life so badly, he should have relied on better help than Jerdak."
Krall's glower turned to some dark relative of a smile.
"Perhaps so. No matter. I think he will be satisfied to see you brought to him in chains once he arrives. Perhaps he will allow you to watch as the Fist of Clavar reduces Klingi Prime to a poisoned wasteland."
Belana took a quick glance at one of the readouts being projected into her eye patch, then back up into Krall's eyes.
"Oh, is that what he's called over there? That won't do."
She looked back over her shoulder to the Science Gorn, and noted both Karn and Vokan having joined him, ready to jump when given the word.
"Make a note. First thing we do after we leave in that ship is change the name."
Krall gave a sarcastic laugh.
"Ha ha! I do not think you are in the position to make any plans, Lantyke Lavar. Your efforts to organize these prisoners were impressive, but numbers are no advantage when we have wide-angle disruptors and you don't.
That's true. You're absolutely right.
B'Elanna's fingers on her Omni-Tool hand moved almost imperceptibly.
You'd definitely have the upper hand if all I had was numbers.
The space at the open mouth of the docking bay rippled as the Huachat decloaked, silently waiting in the vacuum just outside the atmospheric containment field, the distinctive glow of a primed and ready photon torpedo emanating from his forward launcher.
As it is, I'll see your rifles and raise you, said B'Elanna. I'd like to see you top that.
She paused, giving him an opportunity to do so, then tilted her head mock inquisitively and said,
No?
Shaking her head, she told him with a cold little smile,
Kalis the Unforgettable teaches us, Krall. Never bring a gun to a ship fight.
Krall's face was set in a skeptic glare.
You wouldn't dare, Lantyke Lavar.
I'm getting awful tired of you calling me that.
B'Elanna twitched her pinky finger just slightly against a keypad that only she could see, and the turret-mounted disruptor on the Huacha's dorsal hull clearly traversed to lock in on their pursuers.
Care to push your luck?
For a long moment, the two sides waited in their standoff. Nervous energy crackled on both sides as tension built. The only question was who would break first. Krall took a step back, holstering his disruptor, and the soldiers above them did the same.
This is not over. My Lord Emperor will have your life, and those of all around you.
B'Elanna gave a slight jerk of her head, motioning her crew to start heading for their new escape vehicle.
It's nice to want things.
Turning, she strode for the gangway, with Vokan covering her back and Karn flanking her. As they approached the ship, Karn leaned in to speak without being easily overheard.
I thought you told me that your surviving crew were all on this planet.
B'Elanna smiled.
They are.
She gestured briefly to her Omni-Tool, the displays now showing in normal visual mode.
Do you have any idea how long it took me to set up a remote rigging program for that thing?
Karn's eyebrows rose.
Impressive.
The only problem is that we're going to need an engineer for this guy, and I'll be a little busy up on the bridge.
As if on cue, Marcus Satori pulled even with her.
Pardon me for eavesdropping, but I think I can help with that, Captain.
Mr. Satori, you're a ship's engineer?
Yes, ma'am.
Mostly, anyway.
I was apprenticing under Lieutenant Kreld in Implacable before sitting my final engineering officer's exam.
With a rueful smile, he added,
That would have been last week.
B'Elanna laughed as they crossed from the gangway and into the battlecruiser's main boarding lock.
Well, I guess you'll just have to see how well you can figure out the power management systems downstairs. I should be able to give you a bit of a hand once we're in the clear, but I'm going to need warp power yesterday.
Aye, aye, Captain.
Oh, and Marcus?
Yes?
Thanks for the assist back there.
The Seleucian drew himself up and offered his best salute, which came off a bit oddly, given his otherwise ragged condition.
My pleasure, Captain.
Then, after giving one of the ship's status maps a once-over, he turned and started making his way toward a turbolift that would get him down to engineering.